Welcome to Our Story, the podcast. Every month, Pastor Mark from Harmony Toluca Lake sits down with a guest to discuss their journey of faith from an inclusive, affirming point of view. These personal stories are part of a colorful tapestry of individual life experiences that transcend the boundaries of church by connecting us all together, collectively, through faith, hope, and love. This is Our Story.
Hey everyone, Pastor Mark here with Harmony Toluca Lake, the second campus of Hollywood United Methodist Church, and welcome to Our Story, the podcast, part of the Harmony Podcast Network. And today we are blessed with the presence of Reverend Allison Mark from Faith UMC Torrance.
Yay!
It's so wonderful to see you.
It's good to see you too, Mark.
We're going to have fun. Are you ready to have some fun?
Always ready to have fun.
Okay, all right. So what I do in this podcast is I interview individuals and we just talk about your faith journey. Mm-hmm. So you ready to go on that journey?
So you ready to dive in with me?
I am. Can't think of anybody better to dive in with. So here we go. All right. We'll start off with an easy one. What's one of your favorite hobbies?
My favorite hobbies. I love to watch movies.
Uh-huh.
And so that was something that I feel like I did a lot more before children. And so when we can squeeze them in, we can. But my husband and I used to always go to movies on our day off on Mondays, and it was sometimes a double feature, and it was just a way to like wind down and take yourself out of the real world and put yourself into a new place. And
mm-hmm.
But I've been like that since I was a kid, and so it's been exciting.
Movies. We'll have to talk sometime because that's part of my background. Acting
just
and doing movies.
That. I know. I just learned that.
Yes, a couple of horror films, so I know you like horror films.
No, I don't. But, but I like to get scared.
Well, so where were you raised? Where childhood? Tell us about it.
I was born and raised in Honolulu, Hawaii. Actually, born in Honolulu, raised also in Waianae, Hawaii. So if you've ever been, Waianae is very country.
Mm-hmm.
And Honolulu is very city, and so we would call it town and country. And I got to go back and forth because Grandma and Grandpa lived in town. And my dad's church was Waianae United Methodist in the country. And that was the church that raised me up until he was appointed to another church when I was 10. And so we went into town after that, into Kilohana United Methodist Church, which is, if you ever go snorkeling, Hanauma Bay is that side of the island where my dad was appointed. So I was fortunate in my time that he'd only been appointed to two different churches in my lifetime. Before he was married and before he had kids, he was moving all over the island. So my dad has served churches pretty much everyone on Oahu, which is pretty great.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So you were a PK.
I am a pastor's kid, and I curse my children as double pastor's kids.
Yes, we'll get to that one. Oh, my goodness. So, wow, so your dad served as a mm-hmm. United Methodist minister, so you were right into the Methodist church. Dynamic.
Yes, in it to win it. It was like the best way to grow up for me. I never thought it was hard or bad. I have a lot of friends who really struggled being pastor's kids. The moving around as United Methodist pastors' kids were really hard, and we didn't. We had the blessing of moving once, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the church became our family. My dad, his family was in San Francisco. My mom was an only child. So the children we played with were our cousins, their parents were our aunties and uncles, and then the older grandmas and grandpas for us. And so it was amazing. It was an amazing growing up, barefoot, running around mm-hmm. in Waianae, and then being older and growing up at Kilohana. So I love being a pastor's kid. It was super metho nerdy. Like, my sister used to call me that. Like, she's like, "You are such a church dork." I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
When did you realize, hey, I'm being called into mm-hmm. ministry? Well, not only just ministry, but to become an elder within the United Methodist Church?
I ran from that, but I think if you look at a long-term scheme, somebody would say, well, you didn't have to run that long. But I kind of hid it for a while. I felt a call to ministry in high school. And it was because of my being able to see from that local church family, small church family, to doing district-wide things. And I go, oh, it's like a bigger family. And I had such a small family that this was cool. And then in the eighth grade, I started going to annual conference and joined the CCYM, the Conference Youth Ministries. And it was this place where I felt embraced as family, and I got to see people that I hadn't seen every year, right? And I wanted to go back every year to see new people or see old friends. And my senior year, I was the CCYM president, and one of our job duties was to preach. And I'd never preached before. And after I gave a message on how important the body of the annual conference was to me, and I remember the sermon, Mark, it was Making Fishers of Men. And I think my title was Making Fishers of Men and Women. And it was important because the year before, my grandfather had died, the week before I was supposed to go to annual conference. And I had all these responsibilities at the conference, so my parents said, you need to go. And so they sent me. And I felt kind of lost because my grandpa was one of my best friends, and I didn't have my dad because he was staying behind to to get ready for the funeral. And everyone just took care of me. They knew the situation. They knew what happened. They, from every day, made sure I was okay, got me on planes, got me off planes. And so I was able to preach about how important the body of the church was and where Christ calls each of us to serve, but also to help one another. And after that, people were like, oh, you're going to be a pastor when you grow up. And I was like, no thanks. And you know, forgot about it, right? But it's those kind of plantings of seeds that you carry with you, right? And it's those nudges, whether they're baby nudges or giant shoves. Mm-hmm. And I carried that with me all through college and undergrad. And I tried every different major. I have 3 majors from undergrad because every time I wanted to not go to seminary or not think about it, something kept calling me back. And so I have a degree in sociology and in American ethnic studies with a focus on Asian American, the Japanese internment camps specifically, and communications, thinking I can use that. And everybody always asks, how are you going to use your degree? Would you like some fries with that? And I'm like, thanks. But every degree has shaped me and helped me get to this call that I had and answering it. And so when I graduated, the first job I was offered was Christian education director at my home church with my father as my boss.
Oof.
It was rough. The job, amazing. I used to quit all the time, and my mom would say, did you quit your job or did you quit being your dad's daughter? I was like, I quit being his daughter. And it was just like, it was a growing experience. I was 21 years old, still felt a call to ministry, but avoided it. And so I worked. I've taught middle school. I coached high school speech and debate. I worked at the University of Hawaii during TA, anything to not go to seminary. I nannied, house sat. And the call was always there. And it was, I believe, when my dad got cancer, I knew that I needed to go, but I didn't feel ready to leave Hawaii yet because he wasn't well. And he would still write his sermons, and my mom and I would read them, not preach them, but read them. But there was something there. And my dad spent an entire season during Lent speechless. He had no voice. And it came back after Easter. It was amazing. And I think the call started to solidify. And within 3 years, after my grandma had gotten sick right after that and kind of a little more stalling, I was ready to go to seminary. And wasn't sure, up until that point, I wasn't even sure if I would be a pastor in a local church. I wasn't quite convinced. But I'd worked with Charlene Zuhl at the University of Hawaii's campus ministry for all my 4 years there. And she just was this gentle nudge. How can I help you? How can I help you apply? How can I read your papers? How can I read your applications? And the day I stepped onto the Pacific School of Religion campus, I knew. That's where I knew I was called to parish ministry. I wasn't sure if it was chaplaincy. I wasn't sure if it was in a hospital or on a campus. But I knew that my call was to work with God's people.
Yeah, what did that feel like?
It was like this release, like a relief, that I knew that I had not done it because of the pressures of everyone else saying, you're supposed to be a minister, you need to go to seminary. I had finally been there, and it was like me and my buddy Jesus saying, this is we're going to do this together. And I say that tongue-in-cheek because when I was little, I only thought that Jesus was like my friend, like my buddy. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't this whole hierarchy of divine power. And you were a little kid, right? And I feel like it was this natural movement that I was supposed to be working and transforming lives because of the lessons and ministry of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. I feel like we don't always talk about Jesus that way.
Right.
Right? And so I think about God as this divine, but Jesus was like this. If you look at a cross, like God was like this with me, but Jesus was like this with me. And
it's funny because I had similar experience.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. It's weird because God was God.
God is God, yeah.
And Jesus was sort of like my friend.
My homeboy.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right?
I have shirts that say that. Jesus is my homeboy.
But yes, suddenly that started changing the dynamic. And for me, I guess maybe even for you, it's like suddenly that deepened my faith.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And to be with other people who were struggling with the same kind of call and trying to figure it out themselves was actually life-giving. Because you always think you're doing it by yourself or you think you're alone. Mm-hmm. And like my friends would joke with me, they're like, okay, when you come back from seminary, you're not going to preach at us, are you? Or you can't hang out with us if you talk about Jesus too much. And I was like, are you for real? And I knew my friends didn't mean it like that, but they like to joke about it. And so it makes you feel like you're alone.
Mm, yes.
Right? It makes you feel like there are not others like you. And then you go to like a place like General Conference or Annual Conference, and you see all these other people who feel the same way that you do. It's quite a relief and a release and a comfort to know that we all believe that God calls us to the mm-hmm. same place.
Have you ever had a bump on the road in your faith journey?
I think little bumps. I feel quite fortunate that they were never huge bumps. But one of them was in the middle of being in ministry. My husband and I struggled with fertility issues and didn't really know it at the time, but we'd been married for up to 6 years and had tried everything, IVF and had miscarriages. And the thing is, I never once doubted that God wasn't with me. I was sad and I asked God, why and what's going on? And as a pastor now, and in retrospect, I mean, I really recognize that as at least I was having a relationship with God in those troubling moments. When I was frustrated or upset or depressed that, we weren't getting pregnant. And then 6 years later, after 4 miscarriages and 3 IVF trials, Kyra came first, our rainbow baby, and she, we named her Kyra, because we believe in Kairos time. And so in God's time, she was born. And then we thought we couldn't have any other kids. And Amara just showed up. And her name means love. She's Amara Luz, love and light. And so those bumps in the road helped us actually connect with other people who never would have talked about their fertility issues, who never would have come out about the struggles, and we were able to say, we've been there. I do better marriage counseling for folks because of these experiences that we've had. Having both parents and a sister that have had cancer have been those bumps that have helped me be more empathetic in my pastoral care. So that's why I don't think they're big bumps when you have the opportunity to see where God is working in them, but sometimes they're so hard, like watching people pass away and having to do so many funerals and so many things. It, as a pastor, right, in the life of the church, that's what we're called to do. I used to say my freebies, my friends would give me freebies, like here's a free pizza for tonight at a restaurant or what. I'm like, I can do a baptism for free, I can do your wedding for free, and I can do your funeral for free. What do you want? And those little bumps are not bumps because they're part of life, and it's about finding God in those moments and finding God where you need comfort and knowing that God weeps with you when you're weeping and that God laughs with you when you're laughing. That's where we have to take comfort in stumbling on the road.
Yes, using the bump, as you will, for the greater good, the glory of God.
Yes.
But oftentimes we experience those bumps and we are just so down and we can get depressed. Yeah. And there's an element of shame in some things. So,
always.
Like when you're talking about the fertility issue, did you ever have to deal with shame or just you were just distraught?
Oh, 100%, Mark. I dealt not only with the shame, it was like, for us, the traumatizing parts, and this is like having been at general conferences and understanding our book of discipline and the social principles, you know. When we had miscarriages, on a hospital medical bill, they are categorized as abortions. Ooh. When you have a DNC. And so I remember distinctly, not ashamed about God, not ashamed about anything, but I having to make decisions about unviable pregnancies and having a DNC, which is the term the doctor will say to you, but your bill says something else, makes me stronger as a reproductive rights advocate, but in the moment, there's shame that you had to have an abortion. And I didn't have an abortion because I didn't love the baby. I didn't love the person who, you know, helped me make a baby. That was none of that. But you still have the language in our culture that it doesn't help, and it doesn't help women get through what they need to.
Oh,
right?
Oh, that's horrible.
It is awful. I'm watching across our United States how all of these states are no longer these right to live states, letting women have abortions when they need them. And a lot of times they're medical, not in addition to rape and other situations where they can't, need one.
Well, it's like the situation over in Florida where they're having to travel
to other states.
Yes, hours away. And then even being, I think it's in Texas where they're even talking about prosecuting.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
They are.
Yes.
They're prosecuting these women who have to leave their state because they cannot have the babies that they're impregnated with.
Yes. So very difficult. Well, so you graduated from seminary. When did you meet your husband?
In seminary. And we were friends the whole time, Mark. I think that was what made it better. The fact that we were friends. I actually met Andy on my first date with someone I dated for 2 years. And it was like just lovely to have friends in seminary that you could talk about theology and friendships and relationships. And not have to worry about the pressure of being in a relationship with them. And it was about right when he was going to graduate, and we talked a little bit more and made the decision. If he graduated, he was going to go back to Arizona. And when I graduated 6 months later, I would be going probably back to CalPAC conference, to Hawaii or wherever. And we decided to give it a shot. I'll tell you the real story later. But it worked.
He's not even Methodist.
He's not even Methodist. He is a pastor.
Yes.
He is a United Church of Christ pastor, pastoring at a Presbyterian church, which he preaches in Spanish and English every week.
Wow.
Yeah,
well, that has to be a whole different kind of dynamic in the house.
Because I'm at a church that is United Methodist and has a Japanese language ministry. It's pretty cool, though, because our kids get to see different ways of being Christian. They get to experience different people. The language that they're hearing and listening to, I mean, they're pretty funny when you talk to them because they'll say Spanish words and Japanese words and Hawaiian words and do sign language, and you know that they cannot string it all into a sentence because they're like, huh, where am I? But kids are adaptable, and they get it. And so it's been really cool to go to kermesses, Spanish-Mexican kermesses at Andy's church at Emmanuel Presbyterian, and then go to a Children's Day Kodomo no Hi Japanese festival yesterday at my church. Mm. Like it's just a really neat way of being Christian together.
What's been one of the challenges for you as a pastor in the United Methodist Church?
I've been fortunate because my understanding of my call to ministry has always been clear. It's been to love the people. So wherever I go, it's to love the people. I feel like my personal mission call is to empower people to be leaders and disciples of Christ. And if I make my job obsolete, the better, right? Like teaching them to lead. After having kids, you think about itinerancy a lot. You think about...
And so what is itinerancy for our listening audience?
So for those of you who don't understand itinerancy, it means like being nomadic almost, going back to this tent ministry that Abraham had, and where you go where you are sent, go where you are called. And in our Methodist system, it happened because there were churches that were budding and building all over the country, and so we needed to take people with experience and new people and put them places where they need to go. So we got used to the system where every couple of years we moved.
And that's dictated by whom?
And that's dictated by your district superintendents who are the step above you, and they have a cabinet which answers to a bishop. And so every conference has a bishop, and we can go into all the other levels of bishopdom. But so, yeah, so when a bishop calls you through your district superintendent that you need to move, you move. And I told you earlier that my dad only had 2 appointments after he had got married and had kids. I had 1 appointment with 0 kids. My husband and I were married. I was at First Pasadena. And the minute I had a child, like, I was moving. I was called after Pasadena to go to Claremont School of Theology to start a new program between our conference and CST to help young clergy who are called to ministry support them. It was a beautiful program, but the grant was only for a year, and we stretched it to 2. And so after that appointment was over, I was appointed to Holman United Methodist Church, which is a predominantly African-American, Pan-African church. Mm-hmm. And I went pregnant with a second child, and so here I am again. That's a third move, right? And then the pastor at North Hollywood suddenly passed away, and they needed an interim. So with 2 little babies in tow, I had to leave Holman, whom I love the people there very much, and went to North Hollywood and served them as an intentional interim. So I knew that was only a 6-month call. And after those 6 months, after falling in love with their congregation down the street,
yes,
I was appointed to Faith United Methodist Church, and the reason being is they needed someone who understood the culture and understood the community as half Japanese American, half Chinese American, and from Hawaii. I now serve a church that has 60% of its people born in Hawaii. Is that crazy?
Wow.
Like,
yes.
In Hawaii, I had maybe 50% of people in my congregation born in Hawaii, and the rest were mainland transplants. Here, I'm at a church that has more people born in Hawaii than I did at home. And so it's quite an interesting experience, actually, for my kids and for me and for my husband. So they're not hardships, but it is a different way of living, almost like a military family.
Yeah, because I came from a military family. That was part of my background. And so it is hard. Especially when you're trying to build friendships.
Oh, 100%.
Because then suddenly it's like, and I'm gone. And then you have to start all over again.
But you could keep in touch with your friends, right? Like, we have this courtesy of once you leave a church, you've got to give space for the next pastor to have an opportunity to grow.
Right, and I'm sure you've had calls from the former church to say, Allison, I need some help, and you have to say, I'm sorry.
You have a pastor.
Yeah.
And it's most heartbreaking when it's celebrations, weddings, and then also the heartbreaking of funerals, the people that you have known and loved, because we're called to love on our people, and you have to say, I'm sorry, I can't, unless your pastor invites you, that pastor, but that's not my place, right?
Yes.
And so, yeah, there are growing edges for clergy and pastoring as well. But we figure it out, you know, and God is good, and if those relationships are meant to be and you're good at keeping in touch with people, then they last.
Yes.
I think social media has really made it helpful to keep relationships. Like, for me personally, I love updating. I do social media because people that we haven't seen in a long time can see the children that they wanted to raise up, be raised up. And so when they see them again, they know them. And that's a different way of living, too, because 20 years ago, we didn't have it. We didn't have the advent of FaceTime or Zoom or social media. We live in a pretty interesting time, Mark.
Well, I think, too, the dynamic of itinerancy of a benefit is living within the conference structure.
Oh, sure.
Because then you still get to meet people, and you're able to renew those relationships.
100%.
But if you were having to find a church, you could be moving all the way over to Texas or Minnesota or New Jersey or wherever it might be, and suddenly you're completely removed.
Well, isn't that the beauty, though, I think, of, like, you're right, because my husband's system is congregationalist, and he works with the Presbytery, but we have this system that we call a connectional system. And it is so cool because, say you're stranded in Texas in the middle of, it was 9/11, and I didn't know what to, my cousin was stuck there. She was flying from Florida to get home to Seattle on her birthday, September 11th. And she was stuck. So what do? You reach out and you call Methodist. I don't know you, you don't know me, but we know each other. Is there a way that you can help?
Yes.
And so people reached out and helped. You know, this is... That is, I can do a homestay in any state and now places in other countries and say, hey, you know, we have these kids, they're going on a tour, a mission trip or a choir tour. Do you think you could homestay? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can't, but maybe the church down the street can. It's our connectional system that allows us to keep these ties and bonds that I want to say... can't be broken. We've seen some disaffiliation, brokenness, but we're still a strong church.
Oh, absolutely.
And our relationships with people, like Mark, you and I have gotten really close, and it's not just because of the delegation, but it's the time we've been able to spend together through these 6 years on our CalPAC delegation that never ends. But I appreciate you so much, Mark. Like, I get to see your beautiful church. And I've never been able to do that. I'd love to invite you and your congregation to ours.
Oh, I'd
love
that.
To come out for one of the cultural festivals that we have, to share what we have. And that's my dream, actually, for our conference, is that we're better at sharing information, sharing events, sharing ways that we can be together, and using those connections to be each other's resources, be each other's support, be each other's care. And I think that would make us a better church and a stronger one.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I love the connectional system. This is you bring that up, and I recently was asked by a church in Florida about the Toluca Lake campus.
Ooh.
And because they are about to start a second campus.
Yes.
So that's the beauty of the connectional system, is that you're able to say, hey, I'm sure I'm be able to share with you what happened. Here are the
exactly.
wonderful things. This is what to look out for. This is how to build. And so this is the beauty of the denomination.
We resource each other when we don't have them ourselves, right? We can take care of each other. We have a program called Links, And we've connected with all of the larger Japanese American churches in our area. And our kids meet once a month together. Like, that's the beauty of both relationships with the pastors, but the historic connection between the churches, right? You can resource someone across the country who wants to learn how to do something because you have done it before. And how neat somebody told them that.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Well, I want to continue in this faith journey discussion as we're coming toward a close.
Sure.
I know in previous discussions that, I'll just put it this way, you've encountered forms of racism, sexism, discrimination, to try and stand in your way, not only as a phenomenal woman, but also as a pastor.
Sure.
How were you able to face those moments, not only with dignity, but to say, no, I'm moving forward into who I've been called to be?
You want my sassy answer, or do
go for sassy? No, go for it.
Well, it's easy when you go, well, I'm called by God, not by you, right? I mean, I think, but there are the moments when you are hit with the racism or the ageism or the whatever, and you don't know what to say in the moment. And I'm one of those that has to process and think about it. But yeah, I'm called by God to these places. And yes, a bishop appoints me someplace. Yes, a DS calls me on the phone and says, you're going to go to these places. But it really comes down to me and my relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And knowing that I'm supported and protected, and I have people that feel that this is, I would hope that my DS and bishop support the places that have these answers. You know, being the first Asian American to serve at Holman, or being the first Asian American senior pastor at Faith, you know, it's different being the first, but you get to teach people.
Yeah.
You get to show them that you're just as good as your male senior pastors before. Need I say better sometimes? No, I'm just kidding.
Go sassy.
But offering a different kind of way of doing ministry. Mm-hmm. You know, I may not be wearing a suit and tie to church. I can wear a suit and tie to church, you know, but it's not that kind of ministry. My presence may not be 6 feet tall. It may not be, you know, what they want in the way they... I'm a consensus builder, and I'm not top-down authoritarian. But that's, we all have different styles, and that's the gifts that God gave us, that we're not all the same, that we all have different ways of serving in ministry to God's people and to the world. And so I think that's my answer to, like, when I've served on the status and role of women for our global general agencies, and for religion and race in our general agency and in our conference, it's helped me be more understanding. I work with an organization called Kaleidoscope Institute, which is based out of Echo Park, and that's an ecumenical group. Eric Law, an Episcopalian, started it. But we've worked with them as United Methodists to say, hey, how do we do cross-cultural contexts in a way where we are more understanding, how we grow to be more competent in the actual world we live in? I mean, you cannot put yourself in a bubble, because when you go out of that bubble, you're going to be really in for a shock of your life if you don't understand that people are different colors and from different makeups and different walks of life. And so I think it's about being more than just tolerant. It's about being open and being willing to step out in love.
Yes.
Even for those who don't care for you.
Yes, well, that's one of the, just one of the aspects. There are many aspects that I love about you. Allison, is that you have such a big heart and such love for people, but also you have been, as we're coming to a close now, an advocate for our LGBTQ siblings, those who have been ostracized because they have, quote-unquote, been tolerated. And you've said, no, that is not enough.
It's not. Why are we... any different from our LGBTQ siblings? Like, The best way to answer that, Mark, I think, is the way Israel Alvaran, the Reverend Israel Alvaran, who is part of Reconciling Ministries Network, he's our best friend, godfather of our children. He said to me about reconciling, he said, reconciling means not gay people, not queer people reconciling themselves back to God, saying, I'm sorry we're sinners, I'm sorry we, you know, like, let us back in. It is the church that is repenting and asking God to reconcile with us the harm that we've done to our queer siblings. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, like, the most important lesson that he taught me about why it's so important to be an open and inclusive church, and that we were liars when we said we were open hearts, open minds, open doors, when we were not. And so to be the church, to be United Methodists, really means we have to live it. We have to live these open door policies. We have to live, everyone is called to the table, and not be hypocrites. And so I'm glad for the church that we're going to live into, Mark.
Yes.
I think that's our call. It's to connect and to be the church that Christ calls us to.
Well, I am so grateful to have you as a friend and a sibling in my life. And I know that you've just been abundantly blessed and continue to bless your congregation. Mm-hmm. We love your family. And let's see if we can work out something. Maybe we'll get Harmony over to Faith.
I would love it.
Have a little bit of fun. I know our
come
community.
Come on over.
Yeah, I would love this. So in the meantime, continue the great work that you're doing. And we'll have another conversation at another point with even more, I'm certain, to share about the progress being made within the United Methodist Church.
Amen. I would love that very much. Thank
excellent.
You.
Yes.
And we said we'd have lunch sometime. We had about 12 different lunches together.
We're going to make it happen. That's right. Yes. Well, we did in Charlotte. Yes. And dinners. Wow. So, well, it's a joy. And it's a joy to connect with all of you listening to the Our Story, the podcast, here with the Harmony Podcast Network. So like, share, download, do all these wonderful things. But most of all, continue to listen and support what we are doing here at Harmony Toluca Lake. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Our Story, the podcast, with your host, Pastor Mark Stevenson. This month's guest was Reverend Allison Mark, and this episode was recorded and mixed by me, Donna Miller, with production support by Jace Lucas. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to Our Story, the podcast, so you never miss a new episode. You're listening to the Harmony Podcast Network, sponsored in part by Hollywood United Methodist Church. Find us on Instagram at Harmony_TLC and on Facebook at HarmonyTL. We'll see you next month for another conversation. Until then, as Pastor Mark likes to say, peace.